from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, we'll talk with the Register's Rome correspondent, Edward Penton, about his recent coverage of Pope Benedict and the Vatican's preparation for the upcoming conclave. We'll also talk with Andreas Widmer. He is a former Swiss guard and author of the book The Pope and the CEO, about papal leadership and what to hope for in a pope. Welcome to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register. Hi, Jeanette.
Hello, Tom. Good to be here today.
And with you, my friend. You know, Edward Penton is the Register's Rome correspondent. We're delighted to have him on with us today. Edward has covered news of Pope Benedict's papacy since the day he was elected. Before joining the Register's team, Edward reported on the Pope and the Vatican for Vatican Radio. His work has appeared in Newsweek, Newsmax, Zenit, among other publications. The last few weeks have brought a storm of coverage, but some personal reflections from this Vaticanista, Edward Penton. Hey, welcome again to Register Radio.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Edward, it's certainly been an eventful week for the Church. Tell us what the atmosphere has been like in Rome this week.
Yes, well, it's been obviously quite an electric atmosphere, really, but also one mixed with a certain sadness, of course, and certainly yesterday when the Pope left the Vatican, it was a very sort of somber time. I was in St. Peter's Square yesterday as the helicopter left at the Vatican, and the atmosphere was very quiet and very almost silent, except for the whirring of the helicopter, the police helicopter above us, waiting for the Pope to leave. So at that time, it was very somber. But as soon as we saw the Pope and him getting into the helicopter and leaving, all the cheers went up just to see him and to have a chance to say farewell. So it was a rather mixture of emotions, really, I think, for many people.
Yes, Edward, in the helicopter, I heard that it actually flew, it circled completely around Rome so that people could bid their farewell.
That's right, yes. It was a very nice sort of touch that everyone could actually see him and say their farewell. And when he flew over the square, it was wonderful how everybody just cheered and could actually say, obviously, farewell to a Pope in a way which we've never been able to do before. I mean, it was a very sort of a touching and obviously a very unique occasion.
And what is Rome like today? The Holy See is vacant. What are the signs and symbols of that now?
Yes, well, anyone can see just by going to the website, the Vatican website, you'll see that it's now called in Latin the vacant see. And it's so there's a whole change now already. It's visible from that point of view. Last night at 8 o'clock, the Chamberlain, Cardinal Bertone, he's now the Chamberlain, he was the Secretary of State, he's now moved to this new office called the Apostolic Chamber, which sort of comes to life during an apostolic, during the sede vacante, the vacant see time. And he, last night, sealed up the papal apartments in a ceremony. He had said a prayer with the notary of the Apostolic Chamber and another, and a layman. So the papal apartments were sealed, and even the elevator going up from the third, the Terza Loggia, which is the main part of the Secretariat of State and where he lives, that was sealed down to where he normally goes down to the papal apartments, the public apartments, where he greets the public. So that was all sealed in a very sort of ritual way, going back centuries to prove, to make sure that the Holy See is vacant, that nobody's going to take the place of the Pope during the sede vacante time.
This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking with the Register's Rome correspondent, Edward Penton. Edward, tell me a little bit about the Pope's last audience on Wednesday, February 27th. I watched it on EWTN, and the crowd seemed electric, but Benedict himself seemed so serene.
Yes, that's been a hallmark of his sort of approach this whole time. It's been one of serenity and calmness. And a really great sort of, he's always had this, an incredibly strong sense of sort of personal autonomy, of complete trust in God. And you could see that in him during the audience. He just, and in his audience message too, you could find so many references there to his complete trust in God and his complete understanding of the Church and how the Church lives on. It's a living being which is obviously sustained and supported and has Christ at its heart. And so you got that in spades, really, in that wonderful sort of message that he gave, long message that he gave during his general audience. And one aspect I think that particularly stood out for me is when he says that it was a very personal message, and he says, you know, that all I want is for people to know, love, and love God, and to hear his message. And that's been, again, a hallmark of his pontificate. He's always tried to point people to Christ and really to put himself out of the picture. And in many ways, his last act is in many ways just that, to sort of put him out of the picture so that people can see Christ and have nothing obscuring that vision.
I think that the church has certainly felt that and seen that in these days, that he is so Christocentric and also just so humble. The church really does seem alive at this moment.
Yes, the humility, you're right, is incredibly important in all of this. And it comes over very, very strongly, I think.
Now, tell me a little bit also about the Pope's meeting with the Cardinal. The last day, yesterday, on February 28th, he met with the Cardinals of the Church.
He did, and the most important thing, I think, in that speech was that he decided to pledge his reverence and obedience to his successor, which he didn't have to do, but he chose to do. And in that sense, it kind of, I think, he made people feel more at ease at the fact that he'll be not interfering with the Pope, the new future Pope, and he's going to be quite separate from his successor. So that was very much welcomed by the Cardinals there and by many of those present. And also during that speech, of course, he loves to be, I mean, he's a very courteous man, and he thanked the Cardinals, who he'd already thanked the audience the previous day, but he thanked them personally for all that they'd done to support him, and for all the advice they've given him over the past 8 years, and then spent quite a bit of time with each one at the end, meeting all the 144 cardinals who were there, plus heads of the dicasteries and other senior officials. So that was a very fitting send-off, really, the last sort of public address that he gave, apart from the very small one that he gave at Castel Gandolfo later on.
This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking with the Register's Rome correspondent, Edward Penton. Edward, now let's talk a little bit about what's happening next. Is there news of when the conclave will begin?
Right. Well, there's a press conference today where Father Lombardi said that we can't really expect even a date on Monday. I mean, the cardinals will all be starting to meet on Monday for the first day of the general congregation. But he said that there won't actually be a date then, because they still have to meet and they still need to talk a little bit to try and decide when exactly would be the best date for the conclave. So he pleaded with us once again to be patient, because there's been quite a lot of calls, especially from the media, to know, you know, how can we get planning for this, because if it's going to be in the next few days, we really need to know. But I think the speculation is, of course, as you know, that it might be the 8th, around about the 9th, 10th or 11th. But, of course, nobody really knows yet, so we're just going to have to wait and see. I expect probably by the middle of next week we'll probably know the date.
We're an impatient bunch, right? Waiting for the Pope, the next Pope.
That's right.
Now tell me, exactly. you mentioned the journalists. How many journalists have descended upon Rome at this time?
We got figures yesterday from the Vatican that something like 3,500, roughly 3,500 journalists have been accredited to the Holy See already, have been accredited to cover it. So that's an awful lot. And the vast majority of those, surprisingly, are television. And I think 70% of those who've accredited have some connection with television, whether they're camera crews or journalists. So it's going to be well covered. And, of course, with social media and all of that, which wasn't around really in 2005, I think we're going to have an incredible amount of attention on this conclave, more than perhaps there's ever been in history.
Sure, it's really been a tremendous thing to be able to watch this on EWTN and to see so much news on the internet, especially with Twitter. It's been really like we're present. It's wonderful.
Yes, it's been wonderful to I think for many people to really feel as though they're actually here in Rome and on the ground. And also, I think yesterday with the filming of the Pope's trip from the Vatican to Castel Gandolfo was very widely praised, because There's a filmmaker who's now head of Vatican Television who managed to sort of make it into almost like a sort of movie, the way it was filmed, the way they got a second helicopter to follow the boat helicopter. It was really quite spectacular. And so I think people could really follow it in a very sort of intimate way as well.
Yeah, you did a very nice job. Now, tell me, there are many cardinals who are already in Rome. Do you have any idea how many are already there?
Not an exact number, Jeanette, but there were 144, as we know, yesterday meeting the Pope, and I think more have arrived. I think certainly all the curial cardinals, of course.
What will they be doing until the conclave?
Well, at the moment they're just meeting with one another and obviously discussing, I think, what they're going to be doing in the general congregations and the kind of issues that they're going to be covering. I think really just getting to know each other. Because a lot of cardinals don't really know each other, except perhaps those who are the same members, perhaps, of a Vatican congregation, or they're obviously cardinals from the same sort of part of the world. So a lot of them won't know each other. So this is why there is a need for time before the conclave for them to sort of get to know each other and be able to talk to one another. So all of this time has been helpful for them. I believe that most of the cardinals over 80 are already here. We're just waiting for those who are under 80 to arrive yet. But I think they're almost all of them here, I think, by now.
And what has your day been like today? Yesterday was crazy because it was the Pope's last day, but what have you been reporting on today?
Well, I've been writing up, obviously, yesterday's momentous events, but also there was a press conference last night, which was interesting, which I'm putting together as well, about with three U.S. cardinals, Cardinal O'Malley, Cardinal Donato, and Cardinal George. And they both spoke very frankly, really, about what they expect to see or how they're going to be looking for a candidate, not giving up too much away, but it was interesting what they said, and I hope to be putting that together later today for Register readers.
That's wonderful. And can you tell us a little bit about the Pope's remarks, his final remarks, the last time we saw him at Castel Gandolfo?
Yes, well, he just said it was very touching, it was very short, and he just thanked all of those who were present and said he was a simple pilgrim now, simply Benedict XVI and no longer Pope. And I think it was a very touching a touching moment. He was unscripted, and quite amusingly somebody noted that he said he got up and he said, "I'm no longer Pope," and then he realized actually he was still Pope, but after another few more hours. But so he said, actually, but up until 8 o'clock, I'm still Pope. But he was very touched, very moved, you could tell. Yeah.
Edward, it's been great to have you on the show today, and we look forward to your coverage at the Register, and we hope to speak to you again soon.
Great. Good to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Edward. When we return from our break, we'll have an inside look at life in the Vatican, a very timely interview we have coming up next here on Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Michael Warsaw, Chief Executive of EWTN and publisher of the National Catholic Register. We're in a time in history like no other. In our fight for religious freedom and the need for the new evangelization, it's essential to stay connected via the faithful Catholic content delivered by the Register. We've finally been able to help realize Mother Angelica's dream. She always wanted a newspaper as part of EWTN's media apostolate. Why? Because there's an important catechetical opportunity at the intersection of faith and culture. Since the 1920s, the Register has been advancing the truth of the Magisterium. This valuable resource will help you to better understand the faith and deepen your relationship with our Lord. Join the growing ranks of Register subscribers today and access the one source of leading voices and opinions concerning the issues that matter most to you.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DiMello, I'm Tom Price. Andreas Widmer is an international business leader, philanthropist, and author of the book The Pope and the CEO. As a young man, Andreas served Blessed John Paul II as a Swiss guard. He also had the opportunity to meet and observe Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger. Now, as a media commentator in recent weeks, Andreas has provided some very thoughtful observations about Benedict's leadership and the future of the Church. Andreas, welcome to Register Radio.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be with you all.
Andreas, hello. This is Jeanette. First of all, I wanted to talk to you about the curious title of your book, The Pope and the CEO. Tell us about that book.
Thank you. Thanks for that question, Jeanette. My book explores the idea of my experience that I had as a Swiss guard, and then as it happened, I was sort of a non-practicing Catholic before I went into the Vatican, and I found my faith. I found a relationship with Christ in the Vatican, most of it through the example and inspiration of John Paul II, and which then led me back into the civilian life and pursue a career in business, which, praise God, I was fairly successful at, and I ended up being a CEO. And so the book title, The Pope and the CEO, is in a way both about the story of what happened, but also in how somebody like a pope, a religious leader, has and does inspire somebody who's a business leader like myself as a CEO.
So you followed papal leadership for some time now because of this experience that you had. Recently, Register correspondent Randy Hain interviewed you, and in that interview you said you called Pope Benedict's decision to step down a prudent and humble move. Why do you characterize it that way?
Humble because he puts the needs of the Church before his own. Prudent because I believe, you see, the leadership, the demands on the leadership of the papacy have changed over the last 30 years, which is pretty much since John Paul took the Patriarch ministry. Today, having a pope not being able to travel, not being able to interact and see people, talk to a lot of people, and go out. I mean, imagine if the pope would not go to World Youth Day in Brazil.
Right.
The impact that would have on the leadership of the Church and on the perception of and the guidance of the young people. He's making a prudent decision because he's looking at all of that, of the needs that the Church has in the leadership. It used to be that a pope would be in the Vatican and you could be pope for a long time as long as you were, mentally capable to exercising and to making decisions and leading the Church, you could basically be pope. I don't think that at this point Benedict evaluated that to be true anymore. I think Benedict added the need of saying you have to be able to go out and engage people all over the world as pope. And he decided that he cannot offer that at this point anymore to the Church, and that's why he stepped back. And he stepped back before it became very, very obvious that he was that he couldn't do these things anymore, before he was all that frail. And I think that's the prudent step. He did this before anybody even thought of this idea, in a sense, particular to him. And he wanted to do this before anybody called for him to do this, so that this is freely his decision and that he leads the Church into this next stage. And that, again, is a very humble move.
That certainly makes sense. And, you know, you said something that that it was very evident this week, that the Pope's physical presence is so important to the Church, to the members of the Church. And And this week in Rome, with all of the audiences and saying farewell to the Pope, you can certainly see what the relationship is between the people of the Church and the Holy Father. It was just electric.
Yeah, you can look at this. I mean, if we go back to the first Pope, as we say, what would have happened if Peter couldn't have traveled? That would be very hard for him to even be in Rome. You know, even the first Pope then had to go around, and there was no Vatican then, and you had to go around and evangelize and do things yourself. I think we're back into that stage, or into, not that stage, but into that demand on a Pope. The fact that one would be a Pope for life is not really a theological dogma or anything in the Church. That there's absolutely no reason why a Pope couldn't step back, other than making sure that if he does so, that he does it completely out of his own free will and out of his, you know, as a result of his prayer about it. And I think that's what happened in this case. And you know, praise God for that.
This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking with Andreas Widmer about the leadership of popes. Now tell me a little bit more, Andreas, if you will, about Benedict's leadership style. What are some other remarkable parts of his leadership?
It's said that when he was heading up the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, that he would start meetings. You see, what usually happens, think of your company or the organization you belong to, and think of a meeting where the top leader shows up to the meeting. Basically, what you're seeing is a big table with all the people around, and then some question is being thrown out. And then usually what happens is, once that leader, once the president, the CEO, the manager, the coach speaks, guess what everybody else does? They all fall in line. They all start to say, you know, it's basically the debateless meeting, right? What Benedict did as the head of the congregation is he would look around and say, who's the youngest person here, the most junior person? And say, you speak first. And then who's the second junior? You speak next. So everybody gets to speak, and he would speak last.
Wow.
Think of what that means for leadership and what that means for having everybody be heard.
Sure, it's collaboration.
I think that's a beautiful example of who that man is.
And I think that would be true in the way he led with the cardinals. He always had a collegiality that was very, very evident.
Yeah, that's what you see in the last few days, the meetings he's had with them, the way he announced his abdication, and then the fact that the last meeting he had was with the cardinals, and what he told them: among you is the next pontiff, and to him I pledge my unconditional allegiance. He's a very aware person. It's beautiful how one of the things that impressed me so much when I met him and when I got to know him a little bit better, the vistas and the environment that his thought and his presence creates, his intellect creates for you as you enter into that, is a very, very beautiful thing. And it was fascinating to me, something really inviting and something you want to be a part of.
This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking with Andreas Widmer about the leadership of popes. Andreas, can you tell us a little bit about what happened yesterday, February 28th, when Benedict retired to Castel Gandolfo? There was a formal standing down of the Swiss Guards. As a former Swiss Guard, tell us what that means.
You know, the Swiss Guards have one objective, that is one. In the Charter of the Swiss Guards, which was written in 1506, the principal objective of the Swiss Guards is the protection and safety of the Holy Father. We are not doing anything protecting the Vatican or anybody else. All we do is we're the personal bodyguards of the Holy Father. Where he goes, we go. When he goes away, we go away. Well, last night, at 8 o'clock, Benedict ceased to be the Holy Father of the Catholic Church, the Pope. And symbolically, and I think that was a beautiful symbol, many of you may have seen that picture of that Swiss guard in his uniform closing that door.
Yes.
That was, in a very visual way, that Swiss guard closed the door to the pontificate of Benedict the 16th. When he closed the door, there was a picture in the back. You can see the commander of the guards in his civil clothes, then the commander commanded all of the Swiss guards to come to assemble in Castel Gandolfo, and they handed over the security to the Vatican police force, mm-hmm. and then the Swiss guards left and start to behave during an interregnum, during the empty chair, so to speak.
What do they do?
Where there is no pope.
They
don't guard much anymore.
Okay, so when do they actually start guarding the next pope?
Well, they guard the conclave, because that's where that pope is going to be. We just don't know who it is. By the way, that's another thing. Well, we can maybe get a little bit later into that, of who is that next pope and so on. But the next pope God already knows who that is. And that person is going to be in the Sistine Chapel. Well, the guards behave like that and say, we don't know which of you it is, but one of you. So we're in front of, we are the ones who close the doors to the Sistine Chapel and lock that door and stand in front and don't let anybody in or out according to that schedule. As soon as that person is elected, we pledge our allegiance. The commander of the Swiss Guards is a member, is the only lay member of the pontifical family, and he pledges his allegiance to that person, to the new pope, and from then on we will defend and protect the physical safety of that person.
Andres, we're just about out of time now. I think we might have to have you on another show so that you can talk about the leadership of the next pope. But I thank you so much for being with us, sharing your wisdom and your thoughts on leadership.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank God that we all live through such an interesting time in the church. It's exciting.
It certainly is. Thank you so much, Andreas. Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Just look for the picture of the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio for all of us at the Register and here at EWTN. I'm Tom Price. See you next time.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Pray with us, the Holy Rosary, daily on the Global Catholic Network, EWTN.